The Man in the Iron Tank by James K. Baxter. A certain man decided that life was too hard for him to bear. He did not commit suicide. Instead, he bought a large corrugated iron tank and furnished it simply with the necessities of life. A bed to sleep on, books to read, food to eat, electric light and heating, a Bible and prayer book. There he lived a blameless life without interruption from the world. But there was one great hardship. Morning and evening, without fail, volleys of bullets would rip through the walls of his tank. He learnt to lie on the floor to avoid being shot. Nevertheless, he did at times sustain wounds, and the iron walls were pierced with many holes that let in the wind and daylight. He plugged up the holes. He cursed the unknown marksman. But the police, when he appealed to them, were unhelpful, and there was little he could do about it on his own. By degrees, he began to use the bullet holes for a positive purpose. He would gaze out through one hole or another and watch the people passing, the children flying kites, the lovers making love, the clouds in the sky, the wind in the trees. The day came when the tank rusted and finally fell to pieces. He walked out of it with little regret. There was a man with a gun standing outside. "I suppose you will kill me now," said the man who'd come out of the tank. "But before you do, I'd like to know one thing. Why have you been persecuting me? Why are you my enemy when I have never done you any harm?" The other man laid the gun down and smiled at him. "I am not your enemy," he said. And the man who'd come out of the tank saw there were scars on the other man's hands and feet, and these scars were shining like the sun. "Do you want to be made well?" asked Jesus of the man beside the Bethesda pool. A strange question, one might think, to ask of someone who had been ill for 38 years. Why wouldn't he want to be healed? In Monty Python's The Life of Brian, a clever parody of the gospel, there is a sketch where a man approaches Brian, yelling out, "Alms for an ex-leper!" Brian inquires about the ex bit, to which the man replies, "Some do-gooder came along and healed me, took my whole livelihood away." With the magic of humor, the Monty Python team ask an important question about healing, namely, are we prepared to bear the cost of it? I don't believe that God endows particular people with the ability to go around laying their hands on those who are sick, disabled, and terminally ill in order to instantaneously and supernaturally heal them. Medical anthropology distinguishes between a disease and an illness. A disease is between me, my doctor, and a bug. Illness is between me, my family, neighbors, and society. Disease refers to the physical effects, illness to the social effects. AIDS, then, for example, is both a disease affecting the individual and an illness, how society relates to that individual. Jesus healed illness by refusing to accept the ritual uncleanness and social rejection that accompanied disease in his time and culture. He forced others to either reject him from society or to include the diseased within it as well. He aligned himself with outsiders in order to challenge the whole power structure of insider-outsider relationships. I don't think that Jesus supernaturally healed diseases. However, I do think there are people who by nature are therapeutic, and Jesus was one of them. I also think there is a lot about medicine we still don't know, and so-called alternative medicine should not be dismissed out of hand. Further, I think that prayer is often helpful and can affect both physical and social healing. On the other hand, I am aware that people who are sick and their families are very vulnerable to charlatans and religious quackery. I am very skeptical about the antics of religious faith healers like Benny Hinn, who has a billboard down the street. They invariably fail to answer why some are healed and some are not, and why some experience so-called healing at the time and then regress shortly afterwards. If we believe that God is love, consistently wants the best for us, and can suspend natural laws of the universe to affect that, then one needs to ask why some of the most loving and saintly people never heal and continue to suffer, and why some of the worst rogues seem to get a miraculous reprieve. Benny, of course, like many infamous faith healers, believes that God requires him to live as opulently as possible, including having a $40 million jet. Neither Jesus nor the man at the Bethesda pool had financial resources of that kind. The latter's only property seemed to be a mat. Yet this healing story is about cost. In support of his disability, the man had located himself in a disabled community. He had little, if any, options. The community around the Bethesda pools was one of the few safe places where he could be. Disabled people were considered to be not only contagious, but also religiously damned. God had allegedly cursed them. Therefore, the so-called able community rejected them. The five pools of Bethesda were refuge for them, segregated from the mainstream, and a place where hope could be nurtured. The hope, however, was about healing the unclean physical disability and re-entering so-called clean society. Jesus came offering a different hope. Jesus deliberately confronted the illness of society that divided people into clean and unclean, able and disabled. And he did it deliberately on the one day of the week when rulemakers told him he couldn't, the Sabbath. Yes, he was a provocative stirrer. Jesus addressed the illness that had entrapped the man. Jesus invited him to get up on his lame leg and hobble with him out of the pool area and into so-called clean society. Jesus invited him to be a collaborator, a co-conspirator in dismantling the mindset that divides people off one from another, and dismantling too the structures that such a mindset creates. Jesus invited the man, like he invites us, to join his vision of radical egalitarianism, a vision where the boundaries of class, race, gender, sexual orientation, ability, and health are dismantled, so that insiders and outsiders can sit and eat and share together. The man at the pool needed to consider the cost. James K. Baxter's insightful story about the man in the iron tank helps us to understand cost. The tank was secure, certain, and comfortable. So too was the poolside community. The marksman who shot holes into the tank was considered an enemy, not a liberator. At the poolside, the invitation of Jesus had to be assessed. Was Jesus an enemy or a liberator? The challenge to the man and the cost was to walk into confrontation. It wasn't going to be all nice, safe, and predictable, like life in the tank. It was going to be awkward, hard, and scary. Instead of sitting safe amongst the excluded, waiting for some Benny Hinn, he was being asked to get up, use that lame leg, and walk beside Jesus. He wasn't going to be welcomed. Sure, he might find a few allies out there, but generally he was going to be labeled a radical, an anarchist, a parasite, and told, "Go back to the pool." Only when he could behave himself by staying where he's told, then able society would relate to him civilly. Those who believe that Jesus was a faith healer who cured the man's disability have a problem. They have to, of course, believe that God physically intervenes to cure some and not others. This belief, though, apart from being irrational and immoral, does not critique society at all. The disability remains the man's problem, not society's. The cure is fixing the man, not society. "There's nothing wrong with society," say the advocates of Jesus, the faith healer. "What is wrong is the man's disability." They paint Jesus as a healer of individuals, not a revolutionary out to change the world. He's safer that way. I believe Jesus confronted the deep social, political, and theological illness of society. This illness isolated and excluded those who were sick, different, and foreign. This illness created segregated poolside communities, dumping grounds for the tainted, Bantustans for the disabled. Jesus spent his life shooting holes in the philosophical and theological rationale that undergirded such segregation. He sought to bring the powerless to the powerful in order to question the nature and distribution of power. He sought to bring the labelers of illness to those so labeled in order that labels were lifted from the backs of the excluded. There was a cost to him. One who calls the disabled able, the sick well, the feared friends, the useless disciples, the excluded family, is a threat to society's understandings of normality, decency, and order. Is it any wonder he was crucified? "Do you want to be made well?" Jesus asks the man at the pool. The question reaches out across time, place, and culture to us. Are you and I willing to bear the cost of following Jesus' agenda and vision? It's a good question, and the answer isn't easy.